You're listening to the Around Comics Book Club episode on JLA Avengers, brought to you by InStockTrades.com. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. But this is a special episode. This is our book club episode on JLA Avengers. And yeah, this is Tom's pick.
Yep, I picked this.
Way to go. I'm Christopher Niesman. Let me introduce you to this round table, which is Tom.
It's really just a long table.
Yes, it's
from both ends.
It is just a rectangular table. It's a long banquet table with you at one
table.
End and me at the other.
We're yelling at each other from a long distance.
Yes, this is our book club, JLA Avengers, which if you've been playing along at home, was available through InStockTrades.com for 47% off the cover price. So it was, I think, $10.52 or something like that, which was a great price for that.
Almost great deal. You missed out if you didn't get it.
I think you can probably still snag it until tomorrow. So if this discussion piques your interest, or if you would like to come back and listen and read, and if you would like to come back and listen to this after you read it, then you certainly can. But I tell you what, Tom, let's jump in. Let's talk about
the
book. There's a lot to talk about on this. Unlike a lot of our other book club selections, there's a lot of history that went into
this is
a straight up nerd book, but there's also a lot of history in how this book finally came about, which I think we can touch on a little bit later. But let's talk about the meat of the actual graphic novel,
The collected edition. I see that we're both reading the giant hardcover.
Oh, that's yours? Oh, I thought you would grab mine. Yes,
this is mine. No, I brought mine with me.
Yes, we both have the now out of print deluxe edition, which was I think a precursor to DC's Absolute.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the Absolute edition, and it comes with
same size slip cover.
Yeah, and it comes with a bonus book of like scripts and notes and all kind the history of how this all came to be. So yes, if you ever see it at like a con, the Perez art is alone worth getting the big collected edition. And they finally put it out in trade. It had been solely missed in trade for a long time.
Which was kind of disappointing because Marvel may not have embraced this as part of their continuity, but DC, especially if you've read stuff like Trinity, DC has definitely kept this story in its continuity, which I think is very cool.
Kurt Busiek has made a point of keeping the event.
Damn it.
sort of the end points, like the very end of this ties into a lot of stuff, into his JLA run, into Trinity. It's very much still a part of the DC universe.
Yes.
DC canon.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the plot of the story, and then we'll get into our thoughts on what we liked and maybe didn't like about it.
In a way, it is the most stereotypical superhero book of all time. The story it breaks no new ground in how you structure a superhero story. You have the heroes of the DC universe and the heroes of the Marvel universe, the JLA and the Avengers, are brought together by the machinations of Krona and Game Master.
The Grandmaster.
Grandmaster. I'm not as familiar with the Marvel cosmic characters, but
this is funny because that is in the wheelhouse of whenever I was growing up reading Marvel comics is, you know, Contest of Champions. And So that's the Grandmaster.
It all fits right in there. And Krona's looking for the nature of the universe, the nature of creation, which has been a big part of his role in the DC universe since he first appeared. He was the character that sort of created the multiverse by accident. Mm-hmm. So he's looking for it. Grandmaster sets up some sort of bet to try and keep him from gathering the things necessary. And it ends up being kind of like a cartoon plot where it's like a G.I. Joe, that one G.I. Joe movie where they have to gather all the pieces, you know.
It's a superhero scavenger hunt.
Yeah, so these relics, these important items from the DC and Marvel universe are spread amongst the DC and Marvel universe. And we see the JLA and the Avengers meeting up and fighting each other, going to each other's universes, searching for the pieces. And that's sort of like the first third of the book is that. And
what I like about it is that me as an old school Marvel fan, you know, that's what I grew up reading. I was a Marvel kid and you were a DC kid. Whenever you see the 12 items of power that they have to that they have to track down, there's six of them from the DC universe and six of them from the Marvel universe, and I'm just like, you know, oh yeah, the ultimate nullifier and the cosmic cube, and you know,
I did
the
have
Infinity
to look
gems.
Up a couple of the Marvel ones. I never knew what, I was like, what exactly? I knew all the DC ones off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, of course, it's the things that keep the demons free, the wheel, the bell, and the jar. You know, you have all of that, and yeah, you see the JLA and the Avengers meet up. They go to each other's universes. You have sort of like the standard fare that you've had in a lot of the DC Marvel crossovers, where you have individual characters sort of facing off against each other. You have Captain America versus Batman. You have Thor versus Superman. You have the Flash versus Quicksilver. And you have, which wasn't much of a contest most of the time.
It's just really funny because every time I saw the Flash just flat out punking Quicksilver, I thought of you and had big old belly laughs about it.
I was like, poor Quicksilver.
Which
can't get any respect.
It's funny because even if you read in the compendium, the original aborted JLA Avengers, that was 1980s they were going to do it.
Early 80s with Conway writing it, and Perez was judge.
Still Perez. Yeah, it was Mark Grunewald was the current Avengers editor, and the editor from DC would have been
Conway would have been writing it, so I would imagine
was it Dick Giordano was the editor.
He was
an
editor in chief at the time.
So I was trying to think who the overseeing editors would have been. But it's funny because Jim Shooter, even in one of his correspondence letters, is like, the race between Flash and Quicksilver is ridiculous because Flash can run at the speed of light,
and
Quicksilver hasn't even broken
close.
The speed of sound.
Yeah, so there's a lot of that stuff in there. You know, Batman and Captain America are kind of have a standoff, and it's very that portion of it is sort of the standard fare that you've had in all these crossovers. And that's sort of, I think, traditionally what fans of the DC Marvel crossovers have always kind of wanted, is like who would beat who in a fight. So the first third of this book really sort of satisfies that portion of it. And in a good way, too, because this whole book is kind of a celebration of just like superheroes are awesome. And that's the whole point of it. It's not like Marvel's better than DC or DC's better than Marvel. It's just like a big general celebration of both of them with all kinds of things tied in. And
I think it was great for people that were just Marvel fans as an introduction to what is great about some of the DCU and vice versa. But I think even more than that, just fans of comics, for the people that read JLA and read Avengers, it was just really awesome to see all of their heroes together. So I think there are three ways to approach it, and it was beneficial no matter what kind of fan you were.
It was the simplest plot you could really have. And you just got a chance to play around with all the characters and see what all the characters can do. And of course, Perez draws these great scenes of JLA fighting Terminus and
that was awesome.
And the Avengers fighting Starro, and these great panels and these great sequences of all this going on. And you see Superman react to going to the Marvel universe and pretty much saying that the Marvel superheroes are lazy. Why are they?
You know, this place is a mess.
This place is horrible. Like, aren't they doing enough? And Captain America going to the
sees them as
DC
like fascist
universe.
Dictators.
Yeah, like, they make everyone worship them. Yeah, and you get all these. You know, the fact that the Flash doesn't understand the whole mutant thing when he gets in. He's like, oh, don't worry. You know, he comes from a universe where people sort of love the heroes. And then the Avengers go to the DC universe and everyone asks for their
autographs
after they like, meet.
Whoa, like, seriously?
They're like not used to having that. You know, Quicksilver makes a joke about the Flash Museum and all this sort of stuff. So you have a lot of that you know, playing to those.
It is kind of funny because speedsters are just absolutely revered in the DC.
Yeah, no one gives a shit about Quicksilver.
it's like, oh, you can run fast?
Whatever.
How sad for you.
How sad. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and you're a mutant? Let me try and kill you.
The way, you know, for me as a big DC fan when I was a kid, it was very reminiscent of Crisis on Infinite Earths, and the structure of it, even from the beginning where we see a universe being destroyed, is the exact same way that
it was, yeah.
That Crisis on Infinite Earths starts, and we see the crime syndicate on a world getting destroyed. You know, and it harkens back to sort of those big event type things of the 80s.
Was it Archon?
Yes.
Yes, which is, I remember him from an old X-Men issue, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and just flipping through the Giant Edition and looking at just all the truly, you know, awesome art. And anytime you can get some Starro action, and you have Joe, you know, there's that great sequence where when the JLA is in the Marvel world and they're on that monster island and all the giant monsters come out and Kyle Rayner, they're all like Kirby.
Oh,
monsters.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kyle Rayner, you know, he's like, those are some great looking monsters, though, you know? And it's sort of
so many in jokes in this. But yeah, just the sheer spectacle. And for those of you that got the trade, it's a really fun story, and I hope that you enjoyed it to your fullest. But we had mentioned the deluxe edition, and seeing the George Perez art blown up at this size is really breathtaking. I mean, there are some absolutely beautiful scenes in this, and on the kind of the inverse of that, how minute his art can get, it really helped with a lot of the smaller panels that he would kind of cram in there just out of necessity of getting characters in. So the big deluxe edition is really a lot of fun to read.
And it's not just the fighting in the first third either, because you have Busick does take time to have the characters, the Marvel and DC characters, sort of interact in interesting ways. You know, Captain America is in the Batcave, and he's, you know, kind of bonds with Batman over the fact that Batman lost a sidekick too, you know, just like he lost Bucky.
Great, great character moments. And you could tell that, you know, and Perez is probably the best artist for this, because he's done both. And Busick has written both at that
point. He had written Justice League and he had written Avengers. And he was very familiar with
So you had a creative team that obviously held both in with a lot of reverence, and you can see that there's a lot of love of all of the characters that are poured into it. So yeah, it's a you take a situation where, and you know, kind of once again with the compendium talking about some of the memos that Jim Shooter had sent to the DC offices, that whenever you look at this from a long view, nothing can change after this. There's nothing that can be universe changing, and every confrontation between the heroes has to end in a stalemate, which was kind of true in this.
There was multiple showdowns, so there's chances for everyone to kind of win and lose, you know, but it wasn't the only real one where it was like a stalemate was the Captain America Batman, because sort of tried to fight each other and then realized that they couldn't beat each other and that this was foolish.
But there was, in the comic book universe, you know, big picture, there was a huge concession there whenever Batman said, well, I guess you could beat me if I gave you enough time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, ooh.
Oh, what happened? What happened there?
Oh, it's on like Donkey Kong now.
Yeah, so you get all those, you know, the Thor-Superman fight and it's you see tons and tons of characters in different locations, and you kind of take a tour of both worlds, which is fun. And that's sort of the first portion of the book. And then it moves on to the part that I think was sort of the most fun portion of it. At a certain point,
there were two halves. There was there was the Contest of Champions, the superhero scavenger hunt, and then there was the Saving the Universe, which I love both halves for different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite portion of this book is they gather all the items. Krona double crosses Grandmaster, Grandmaster double crosses Krona, and something happens to the two universes where they're sort of end up melded together, as Grandmaster did to trap Krona in the worlds. And what ends up happening is it
turns into the JLA, JSA annual meetup.
Yeah, except it's the Avengers live on one Earth and the JLA lives on one Earth, and all of their history has been changed. They know each other.
It was the JLA, JSA meetup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Except with the Avengers. And mm-hmm. with this portion of the book also gets into one of the things I think that was very ambitious was the because the nature of the universe keeps changing, characters' costumes keep changing. You see just about every character in every version of their costume at some point because the whole universe is shifting. And we see Barry Allen has come back and Hal Jordan has come back mm-hmm. and constantly shifting around. But we see sequences where Hawkeye's hanging out with the JLA and Black Canary is interested in him, and there's a little rivalry
More than interested.
Yeah, Green Arrow and Hawkeye have a rivalry between uh-huh. each other. And it to me, that was the most fun because it really subverted kind of, I think, how most people see the meetup. Most people see the crossovers as like a fight between them. And here's,
Black Canary already has a history of jumping universes and getting into relationships.
Exactly, yeah. So we see the Avengers on their Earth fighting Brainiac or just after they fought Brainiac. And you see the annual get-together where they all meet up and they're all friends with each other. And it's a very interesting and funny way because you see how different characters interact. You know, the rivalry between Hawkeye and Green Arrow, and you see, you know, Thor talking to everyone, and you have these great full panel sequences of like buffets where, you know, it's just a huge Perez sequence of everyone sitting around talking, the Vision's talking to Red Tornado, you know, the history of those two characters sure. being very much sort of similar characters that sort of played off each other.
Yeah, sentient androids.
Know. Yeah, playing out. And that's a thing, talking about the in-jokes, stuff like that. You know, there's a great part where Hawkeye's like, I recognize these guys. And then he's like, oh, I know, it's Squadron Supreme.
Yeah.
He's like, these guys are just Squadron Supreme ripoffs. Yeah, which was one of my favorite, because historically the Squadron Supreme was a playoff of the Justice League. So you have all the characters, like Wonder Man, arm wrestling Wonder Woman, and sort of cute jokes going on like that. But in this whole sequence, Superman and Captain America are the two that are unsettled by what's going on.
Know that something is wrong.
Something is wrong. Yeah. Like they're so attuned to their own universes that this change has affected them. So, and everyone else is like, oh no, this is just how things have always been. And it's a very fun sequence because we get flashbacks to former adventures that they've had fighting against different foes. And it is like JLA Avengers. And of course,
and I'm not familiar enough with the original JLA Avengers stories, but was that kind of woven into that part where they actually, you know, the past encounters kind of mirrored what they were going to do the original? Like Kang, I know Kang the Conqueror was in the original script for the aborted attempt, and they talk about, you know, that a little bit.
I mean, just in the sense that they seemed like thematic Silver Age stories. You know, of course, Amazo would team up with Ultron. They're both robots, mm-hmm. you know, that were made by scientists. Of course, Kang would team up with the Lord of Time because they're both time travelers. And
you know what? I think that was the original. That was the original Jerry Conway one that didn't happen. So I think that was used probably intentionally.
But especially in this sequence, you see. You know, Justice League Detroit is around every single Avenger and Justice League member you see.
This was, we may have mentioned it before, and I know that George Perez has talked about it before, that his goal is to draw every character that Marvel and DC has ever had in any comic book. And I think he probably knocked out about 50% in this four-issue series, because there are pages where there are literally hundreds of characters on the pages. So I think he knocked out about half of.
He got a lot of it done. Yeah. A lot of it done in this portion of the book. And of course, you get to the section where the Phantom Stranger, who was a Justice League member, he kind of shows up and explains, you know, something is rotten that's going on. And another one of my favorite portions of the book is. He brings them to where Grandmaster is. Grandmaster explains his plan that he was trying to hold off Corona by trapping him between the worlds, but now Corona sort of figured it out, and he's going to bring him together. He's going to destroy him, and he's going to figure out the nature of the universe. You know, you already killed Galactus trying to figure out the history of the universe, of the birth of worlds.
He wanted to know what happened before the Big Bang.
Yeah, so. That's always. If I was Corona, I would just give up on that. It seems like he's really just causing himself a lot of problems. And again, there's an opportunity for great story points because Grandmaster reveals that, listen, if you change things back, here's how your life is going to be. And we see all the terrible things that have happened to all the characters. You know, Barry knows he's going to die. Hal knows that he dies because he's the Spectre at this point. Everyone sees
Batman knows that he's gonna lose Jason Todd. And,
they can see what's going to happen when they go back. And then we have, you know, the quiet portion of the story where they're all sort of like, you know, everyone admits that they have to, we have to do this, we have to go back, and even though knowing that they're going to die, they're all going to.
It's because they're heroes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a very hero defining moment in the book.
And we even see Spider-Man. So they, Teen Titans, you know, it says JLA Avengers, but really,
it's
you see
DC, Marvel.
You see just about everything you can. You see all the teams working together. And it had some of my favorite sequences towards the end when they're, the calm before the storm, when they're all sort of talking, and we see, you know, Barry saying that it won't be so bad if Wally, you know, if someone else takes his spot, knowing that someone's still doing what he did.
If it's going to be somebody, then Wally's the right person.
And they're kind of like, and that guy who wears yours looks all right, too.
And Hal's like, well, I guess it'll be okay if I kill all my friends.
I guess I'll go. And then, you know, the Aquaman-Thor discussion, which is, you know, it's fun. Thor is kind of really awesome in the whole story, because he just, in that heavy Thor speak, the entire time, where he's like, I would beat Superman in a fight if we had enough time. You know, like he had the upper hand for a while. And then we have Captain America and Superman, who have been sort of at odds with each other the whole time. Sort of have, like, they come together, and Superman says that Captain America's got to be the one to lead them when they go in, and Captain America wants Superman to use the shield when they're busting into the corpse of Galactus, which Krona's used as his base. And then you get to the big, you know, final
the big
fight.
Hoo-ha.
The big final fight sequence as they fight through to get to Krona.
Which this is cool, because now you get just about every, well, not just about, you get every member of both teams through their entire history fighting and every variation of every costume they've ever worn, fighting just about every villain.
You know, you got any group, Hydra, you got Hydra, you got Cobra, every bad guy you can think of is involved in this story. You know, don't think about it too much and how he got them all there.
The worlds are colliding,
and of course
dimensions are shifting.
The matchup everyone was waiting for, Batroc the Leaper versus Batman. The matchup that I was dying, finally, after years of reading comics, when I was like, who would win between Batroc and, of course, you know, Batman beats Batroc. You know,
punks seem pretty bad.
Yeah, it's not a huge issue. And in my favorite, it's Flash that saves the day with Hawkeye. Sort of, you know.
Well, it has to be. Flash always solves any of the crisis problems.
Yeah. So he and Hawkeye are the big heroes of the story, and it's just it's not complicated.
Well, what I like about them doing that, and the universal switchover of bringing back old classic members of each team, is that whenever you do something, this came out in what, 2004, 2003, something like that, early 2000s. And I remember when it was coming out.
2003, 2004.
The 2003-2004 team rosters for JLA and Avengers are only going to be like that for so long.
Yeah.
You have people like Triathlon.
Triathlon was, yes.
He gets about four panels of play there. But, I mean,
it brings a way to bring in the classic characters.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, I want to see the current JLA, but, you know, damn it, I want to see Barry and Hal. And, you know, I want to see those classic characters.
I want to see classic Aquaman look, you know, not necessarily, you know, so they find a way. I mean, the plot of the story is really in service solely to the desires to have these things happen, to see all the characters in the costumes. But Busiek and Perez do a good enough job to make it fun enough that you don't sit there and go, oh, God.
They did the impossible in that they probably scratched about every fanboy itch in a comic book plausible way that was a very fun read.
Yeah.
This book is, I mean, that is no small order to do a JLA Avengers book and to make pretty much anyone that would read it have their tiny moment in the sun. And they did that. And that's,
hey, if you like Justice League Detroit, there was one panel where they were sort of in it.
Vibe is in this book.
I know, yeah. Listen, Vibe fans, you got what you wanted. Of course.
No,
you
no, Vibe fan.
Vibe fan. Of course, you get Jeff Johns is the one Vibe fan. And then you get, you know, Superman picks up Mjolnir. So you always have that, you know, mm-hmm. you have that great moment of Thor and Superman working together. And Corona gets compacted down into a cosmic egg has made appearances in the Justice League and in Trinity. And mm-hmm. it's been a part of the DC universe for a while.
Which actually, and once again, going back to the first aborted attempt that was Kang was trying to go back to the dawn of the universe,
of course, yeah.
To recover the cosmic egg, which is what the Marvel universe was born out mm-hmm. of. So they love these cosmic eggs.
Eggs hatching. It's not mm-hmm. that far of a stretch to say something hatches. It hatches from an egg. Mm-hmm. So again, it's the most without a knowledge of the DC or Marvel characters, the story is sort of ridiculous and
it's
incredibly slow moving and like, oh, another fight sequence. But the whole joy of the story is if you know the characters and you enjoy Marvel or DC mm-hmm. characters and you've read Avengers and you've read Justice League, it's fun. It's yeah, just well,
it's
a fun...
Kind of, you know, it's kind of like Crisis in that
in
that regard.
A celebration of it. It's a celebration of just Marvel and DC superhero comics.
Now, you had mentioned some of the great Easter eggs
yeah.
that were in the
there's
art of the book.
There's things everywhere in this book. It's there's great websites with annotations.
Annotated sites, the compendium, the that came with the deluxe edition kind of goes panel for panel and will tell you what costumes are on who from what era. And there are there are very few classic covers that are embedded into my brain like you, but apparently there are panels in here that are like inverses of classic covers. It's like they'll take like a classic JLA cover and then all of the characters will be the Avengers in those poses
there's a lot of that stuff in there. If you have the companion or if you've got the trade and you can look online, there are tons of annotation sites that will point out exactly like because every page has that. Every page has Easter eggs of that sort of type going on. Whether it's my favorite appearance of anything in this book is of that when it was just Justice League America, like in the 90s when there was this weird pterodactyl creature that hung out with the Justice League and he appears in the book and I'm like, man, if music is going that
he's going
deep,
that deep
into this, yeah, you know, if he's going into that night right before, mm-hmm. if he's going into the Justice League right before Grant Morrison started writing it, then we're deep into the story. But again, it's fun. If for some reason you only read DC, you only read Marvel, it's still totally worthwhile. It'll be fun. You'll be introduced to all kinds of other characters and. It's one of my favorite things. I read it every year. I read this and
really?
Crisis on Infinite Earths all the like once a year usually. On a weekend if I'm sick or something.
Add Secret Wars to that and you'll be good.
It's all right.
Has it held up very well?
I like Avengers Forever.
You know, I'm reading that the same time that I'm finishing this up, and those are fantastic companion books to each other because it's very, very similar in feel. And who is that? Busick as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Same team.
Yeah.
Busick and Perez doing it.
Perez do? No.
Did he do that? Which am I thinking of? Who did Avengers Forever? Pacheco?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I got all my stuff mixed up.
Okay.
So yeah, but I mean, Busick does a good job of, he's really good at recalling older styles of writing, whether you think that's a good thing or not. I know some people will read some of the older, you know, some people would read this, mm-hmm. I think, and maybe think, oh, there's a lot of exposition and a lot of caption boxes, but it's sort of in the style of the story.
Yeah, you need it for something that harkens back for, you know, 50 years.
You need people to call each other by name so you know who Triathlon is.
Yes.
Without the annotations. Who the hell is that? Why is that guy there? When did he join the Avengers?
When did he leave the Avengers?
He's Triathlon.
Yeah. I guess there was a reason for Avengers Disassembled.
We I don't got think a triathlon would, hater.
Yeah, probably. If triathlon is your favorite character, email us at info@aroundcomics.com. All right. Well, are we done with our talk on Avengers JLA? Okay. Well, if you enjoyed Avengers JLA, which we certainly hope you did, go ahead and email us at that same address, info@aroundcomics.com, or you can email myself at chris@aroundcomics.com. I don't think Tom ever checks his Around Comics email.
If you've sent something to me, I have not looked at it in a year, so sorry.
Let's go ahead and announce our next book club selection.
What is it?
I have...
hand-selected?
There's been much hand-wringing, tearing of cloth as I...
No! Sackcloth and ashes. Yes.
As I have tried to decide what the book club selection is. And a few months ago, I had kind of sat up in a cold sweat.
A vision? Like, you're on a vision quest in a sweat lodge?
I've never read Hellblazer! And
your wife said, go back to sleep, Chris.
Yes. It's
What's
like,
your problem?
No, she said, go
buy some Hellblazer.
Go out on the couch.
I've never read Hellblazer.
You don't understand.
And then your dog attacked you.
You are the only person my dog has ever bit. She thought about Wood, though.
I would bite Wood. Yeah. He looks suspicious.
He is suspicious.
He's a capitalist. He probably would train.
So I put out a post, I think on the 11 o'clock comics message boards of, I've never read Hellblazer, show me the way. And of all people, I got a private message that says, Chris, I am the preeminent Constantine expert in North America, and this is what you should read. And all of this was listed out, and it was signed Jeff Lemire.
Wow.
Yeah. How about that? So this is...
Well, Jeff, we'll see, huh?
If you
so this is really Jeff Lemire's...
This is Jeff Lemire's pick. So,
God.
This is Dangerous Habits. Constantine Hellblazer, Dangerous Habits. It is written by Garth Ennis with art by William Simpson and
Billy Simpson.
I went backwards on this one. I didn't read it backwards. I watched the...
You are thorough. I read it forward and I read it backwards.
My introduction to Constantine as a character was the Keanu Reeves movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Jeer, if you will. I actually like that movie.
It's not terrible.
It's not terrible.
I suppose people that are big Constantine fans are probably like...
Yeah. And so for me, coming into it cold, I actually liked it. I thought it was fine. I went back and read Dangerous Habits, which once again Jeff had suggested as a good starting point. If you like the Constantine movie, a lot of those concepts are in this book.
Okay.
That this particular storyline was really mined for the Constantine script. So, Dangerous Habits. It is from Vertigo, and InStockTrades.com will be sponsoring this. I haven't heard back from them on what the exact percentage.
Did we lose our sponsorship?
But no.
Gone?
No, I just emailed them today. It was I was much hand-wringing, Tom. I didn't decide on this
down
until
to the
today.
Last one. What were the other choices?
Jar of Fools by Jason Lutz was probably second place, which we'll talk about on Around Comics probably on Monday. This one retails for $14.99, and so I'm sure that with the already with the 37% discount, it's under $10, and they're probably going to up the discount even more.
Yeah, you gotta be a real idiot not to buy this.
Real
moron. You must like being poor.
It is, it's basically about a $10 trade after your online discount, or even go into your LCS and you can pick it up.
If you don't buy that,
bucks.
I have a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
Yeah, there you go. Tom, always. Making audio love to the listeners and ingratiating yourself. So,
yeah, I mean, just buy it.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So, which actually, you can borrow my copy
if you
would like. So,
I would love to.
So anyway, there you go. That is our book club episode on Avengers JLA or JLA Avengers, which we didn't mention. Whenever it came out in single issues, the first and third issue were JLA Avengers, and the second and fourth issues were Avengers JLA.
Yeah.
So, which was keeping it real.
Keeping it even.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it exactly even.
Nothing can change, and everything must end in a stalemate.
No one must have. Even Quicksilver gets his one moment against the Flash.
Well, sure he does.
Yeah,
of course he does.
I mean, Seriously.
You kind of rolled your eyes whenever that happened, but
yeah, Quicksilver's a bitch.
All right, so thank you to InStockTrades.com for sponsoring this. I think you can probably still pick that up tomorrow for that additional discount, and then run out and get Hellblazer, Constantine, Dangerous Habits, and we will be back with you on that. That it's a pretty quick read, so I think we can probably knock that one out here in the next month. So go ahead and get it, and then Tom can start wringing his hands on what his selection is going to be.
All right. Oh, it's right back to me. That's right.
It is. It's right back to you, my friend.
Oh, fuck.
All right. Thanks, folks. Once again, this was a special episode of Around Comics, our book club. So if you want to come back on Monday for a full-length episode of general comic book and comic culture discussion, you are certainly invited to do so. In the meantime.
In between time.
Thanks, sir. Damn. We will be everywhere in...
and around comics.
Hey.
You like that? I said it sort of in a sexy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I don't know.
Some people find my voice sexy.
I don't know. You're married now, so you know, the sexometer is, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Don't tell the lady fans I'm married. They can imagine that they have a chance with me. It's like with the boy bands. We're like on Menudo. They're just going to replace us with younger versions. when you get up to 50.
We saw how that.
Yeah. I assume you're going to start.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.